From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Jane Clayson, and this is On Point. Sunday was an historic day for the U.S. women's national soccer team. After a scoreless first half, Team USA went up 2-0 to defeat the Netherlands in the World Cup final.
That's it. U.S. wins their fourth World Cup.
The U.S. now holds 4 of 8 Women's World Cup titles. And this team in particular is making history. Lauren Centric came to France from Tampa, Florida to watch the game, and she spoke to NPR.
There's just something special about the women's team. To see the passion and just to see that how they played, everybody worked so hard. There's no flopping around. It's gotten much more technical, and it's really, really great to see.
They're making history off the field, too, demanding equal pay and better treatment of female athletes. This hour on Point, the U.S. women's national team and the way forward for women in sports. Join us. Did you watch the game? What does this team represent for you? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We're working on our connection to Lyon, France, so I'd like to start with Brianna Scurry. She's joining us from Washington. She was the starting goalkeeper for the U.S. women's national soccer team in the 1990s, including during the team's 1999 World Cup victory. She's a two-time Olympic gold medalist, and in 2017, Brianna was inducted into the National Soccer Hall of Fame. She will long be remembered for her huge save during the penalty kick shootout at the 1999 FIFA Women's World Cup final against China. Here it is.
Ying will go next, the first starter for China to take a penalty kick. The shot! Save, Scurry!
Feel like you're right back there. Brianna, welcome to On Point. Nice to have you.
Hello. Thanks for having me. That never gets old.
And I'm sure it does not. It was fantastic. What a nail-biter yesterday's game, huh? What a game. Scoreless the first half, then 2 goals. Help us understand how historic that game was.
The game was absolutely fantastic. I just felt so proud to even have been a part of this amazing run for the national team. Being someone who was on the team in 99 and for 14 years, it's just so incredible to see where the game has come to. And that game yesterday, it was a nail-biter. I noticed that goalkeeper had been playing well for Holland, and she really did come through for them for a very long time. But eventually, the USA just wore them down. And I tell you, you know, Megan Rapinoe had a fantastic game, but Alex Morgan did too. I tell you what, she just worked and worked and worked, and finally was able to, force the VAR to give her a penalty, and then of course Megan put it home, and then Rose Lavelle with a fantastic strike at the top of the box has finished it off.
So the depth of this bench, I think that's what's so remarkable. I mean, Megan Rapinoe, a superstar, but she stands out among a team of other superstars, doesn't she?
Yes, she certainly does. I think Allie Krieger said it best a couple of weeks ago that they actually have the 2 best teams at the World Cup.
Right.
All 23 of them are capable of starting at any time and making an impact. And I think the performance shows exactly that.
What about the athleticism of this World Cup team?
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. I mean, every single player is at peak fitness. And, you know, Jill Ellis, all credit in the world to her. I mean, this is an undertaking of years and putting the right pieces together and making sure the team gets everything they need and had them fine-tuned and playing their best at the best possible time. And I think what's amazing, too, is you had an interchange between Sam Mewis and Lindsey Horan coming in and out of that central midfield position and never losing a beat. I mean, that's truly a testament to the fact that they are a team of 23 best friends, as Alex Morgan put it, and that they play for each other.
I want to play this clip. This was during yesterday's World Cup final. This was the chant. Listen carefully on the field. Here it is. Equal pay, equal pay, equal pay. Brianna, talk about the fight for equality. Your team in 1999 actually pioneered this fight. Tell us more about what's going on.
Yes, we did. Back in the late 90s, as a player, we knew that we were doing something amazing on the pitch, but we also wanted to make a huge impact off of it. And we knew that because of the success of the team at that point, that it would be important to use the platform we had as World Cup champions, as an Olympic champions, to push the envelope to move the goalpost, if you will, towards equality for women's athletics. And I think because of the huge success we had in 99, we felt we were able to really make a stand and raise our voices and try to not only, you know, improve the game financially for us, but for all the players that would come after us. And so this battle for equal pay is multi-decades. It's generational. And, you know, we did our bit. And I'm so proud of the way the team now has taken up that mantle, that it's just not enough to just be great footballers, but also to be someone who is really making a great impact to society as well. Mm.
I want to bring in now from Lyon, France, Caitlin Murray. We finally got our connection. We're glad to have you, Caitlin. Caitlin's a soccer journalist. She's author of the new book, The National Team, The Inside Story of the Women Who Changed Soccer. You can find an excerpt at our website. Caitlin, you covered the World Cup for The Guardian. You've been busy. Nice to have you.
Yeah, sorry about the technical difficulties. I'm glad to be here.
No problem. We've been talking about the incredible win yesterday. You were there. What was it like?
Oh, I mean, the atmosphere was just incredible. I mean, you played that clip of the crowd chanting equal pay, and it was very much a pro-American crowd. I mean, there was a little section of orange shirts you could see, but I mean, it was incredible to see how many Americans came all the way to France to watch the U.S. play. I was there 4 years ago in Canada. And you sort of expected it to be a pro-USA crowd. But here in France, to see how much support the Americans had all the way through the tournament was just really special.
I was talking about the wage gap and the pay issues associated with women's soccer with Brianna before you came on. I want to play this clip because this is the U.S. women's soccer team co-captain Megan Rapinoe addressing that wage gap issue between the U.S. men and women's national teams, as well as how the Copa America and the Gold Cup finals were actually scheduled on the same day as the World Cup final. Here's that.
I mean, if you really care, are you letting the gap grow? Are you scheduling three finals on the same day? No, you're not. Are you letting federations have their teams play two games in the 4 years between each tournament? No, you're not. So that's what I mean about the level of care. We need attention and detail and the best minds that we can possibly have in the women's game, helping it grow every single day.
So, Caitlin Murray, a lot of issues here. It's not just equal pay. Where do we stand here at this point?
Yeah, I think there's no question that there's a lot of work to do. I mean, the Women's World Cup set a bunch of records for viewership in many countries around the world. And what we've seen is that the prize money does not reflect the interest in the Women's World Cup. You know, prize money is one thing. What the national teams are being paid, the U.S. women are obviously suing the federation for equal pay. So in the United States, that's an issue. But I think it's more sort of the treatment and the way the people in charge think about women's soccer. One of the things that Megan Rapinoe says a lot is that FIFA hasn't shown that they actually care about women's soccer. It's not just about the prize money. It's about, you know, other men's finals being scheduled on the same day. It's here in France. I've been following this tournament throughout the entire month. Not enough merchandise kiosks. Mm. Not, you know, planning with the local cities about having trains available, making sure they're available well after a game ends.
Well, it's also
it just sort
about,
of seems like there wasn't a lot of thought yeah. put into some aspects of this tournament.
Yeah, it's also about U.S. soccer flying the men's team around on charter flights while the women get to fly commercial. It's about men playing on natural grass while women play on artificial turf, which is much harder on the body, harder to recover. Brianna, you've lived this. Tell us sort of historically how this has played out.
It's been really difficult. So traditionally, the main arguments from U.S. soccer and FIFA as to why there's such a disparity, their arguments were usually, you know, financial. For example, ratings and revenues, okay? And so that's always been the argument. You know, you're not bringing, you know, the eyeballs to the game, you're not getting the ratings, and you're not bringing in the revenues, you know, in the gate and or with merchandise. Now, what was said a few minutes ago is the reason why there's not enough availability. There's not enough money being put into development so that teams can properly prepare. There's not enough money being put into the women's game by FIFA. And then therefore you don't get the fruits of that sowing of that seed. Mm-hmm. I mean, how can you possibly expect if you're only going to put two seeds over here and 98 seeds over there, how can you expect the same fruit to grow? So it just doesn't make any sense. So essentially the argument is circular and it's self-perpetuating. And the truth is the women, not only in the United States, but in other countries, have been able to, you know, survive and thrive in the environments that are really difficult. And there really isn't an argument anymore. The revenue argument is moot as well, as the women's team for USA has brought in either equal or more revenue in the last several years, according to U.S. Soccer's own budget, than the men have done. And so, I mean, there really isn't an argument anymore.
And Caitlin Murray, you actually write that in many ways, facing these challenges has made the women's team stronger.
Yeah, I mean, I spoke to a lot of players for my book who talked about the struggles and having to work together to stand up for themselves has made the team stronger. And I think, you know, a lot of the discussion going into this World Cup was about whether the equal pay lawsuit that's going on right now was going to distract the team. And I don't get the sense that that happened at all. I think the team is more united.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the things, you know, in the mix zone last night, asking the players about the success that they had in this World Cup, they talked about being such a unit and having so much cohesion and chemistry and really fighting for each other and caring about each other. And part of that is that they are standing together in these situations where they are going to be ridiculed and there's going to be people who are going to tell them to shut up, but they are doing it together. They're fighting together, and
standing
I think that
strong
has brought them closer.
Caitlin Murray, Brianna Scurry, stick with me. We are discussing the Women's World Cup, women in soccer, after Team USA's historic win on Sunday. You can join us, listeners. Has your perception of women's soccer changed over the years? Who's your favorite player? I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson. We're talking about the U.S. Women's World Cup win and their fights for equality and justice on and off the field. You can join the conversation. Do you support the team's lawsuit claiming gender discrimination? Do you live this? Does Megan Rapinoe's pride message resonate with you? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Over the course of the Women's World Cup, the team was accused of being arrogant. Striker Kristen Press responded to the criticism last week.
I don't think our team is arrogant at all. I think that our team is confident. We're respectful of our opponents. And I think the way that we respect them is by preparing for each game against as if the opponent that we're going to play is the best in the world. And I think that on top of the level of intensity and preparation and effort that goes into each game is the best way that you respect who you're playing.
Caitlin Murray, author of The National Team, The Inside Story of the Women Who Changed Soccer, and Brianna Scurry, legendary goalie and former women's U.S. national team player. Arrogant? Arrogant? Did I hear arrogant? Brianna, what do you think about that? The kerfuffle that ensued after that, it was quite something.
Kerfuffle is a great way to describe it. I was actually a little bit dumbfounded by the whole thing with the celebrations. It's almost as if there's a misunderstanding here. When you have a situation where you're scoring a goal in a World Cup championship situation, and not just a final, but any of those games, that is a huge, huge achievement. And I feel, and a lot of us do feel, that you should celebrate it and have respect for it and not act like it wasn't a big deal. Even if it's a team like Thailand, you know, you have great respect, like Kristen said in that clip, for your opponent. And if you're able to score a goal, that is something to be celebrated. And obviously there's different types of celebration, but That's not the issue. It's the thing that should be discussed is the tactics and the speed and the talent of the team, not how they celebrate a victory, so to speak, within a game.
Caitlin Murray, you've written about in your book, you take us all the way back to 1985 when there was no game. You know, there were some talented players thinking about getting together, and you chronicle this incredible path for these women. And to Brianna's point, the athleticism and, you know, the rigor and all that these women have put into this, I think it's an extraordinary moment for them, you know, generally.
Yeah, it's interesting. Alex Morgan, pretends to sip a cup of tea and the internet explodes. And it's sort of fascinating to think about how far this team has come since, you know, 1985 when they played their first ever game and no one was watching. No one knew the team existed. We've clearly come a long way, that this is sort of a cultural discussion. Everyone was sort of picking a side of whether the U.S. should have been celebrating these goals or not. Were the U.S. the villains of this tournament? It's really, I think, fascinating for the players. And I think they, you know, maybe roll their eyes, some of the coverage, but I think they appreciate it. People are talking about the Women's World Cup. They're excited. It's, you know, water cooler discussion. And that is just so beyond what I think, you know, when I spoke to the players who played on the team in the 1980s, they couldn't have imagined that it would become what it is today. So you kind of have to take the good with the bad. Yeah. There are going to be discussions about tactics and the actual games, but then people are going to focus on some other sillier things, like whether Alex Morgan, was taking a shot at English people, the entire country of England, because, you know, she celebrated a goal by sipping tea.
I was the Rose Bowl in 1999, covering the Women's World Cup win for ABC News, and I dug out the ball that Mia Hamm and Julie Foudy signed for me after my interview with them that day. And I remember the spark that was ignited after that particular game, Brianna, that 1999 win. Remember when Brandi Chastain stripped off her shirt and that iconic picture of her in that black sports bra made the cover of Time magazine and Newsweek? Something changed in women's soccer at that moment, don't you think?
It definitely did. That image of Brandi and just the amazing feat of what we did in 99, I think made the cover of everything.
Yeah.
All around the world, which is really, truly amazing, to the point of I was astonished. I think we all were with how we were received and just the amazing amount of visibility we were able to get. And that was before social media. So could you imagine how it might have been if we had social media back then? But that truly was the flame that began in my mind, the spark, if you will, because I think it not only changed women's soccer in the United States, it changed women's soccer all over the world. That was a very big moment for not just our team, but for every women's organization in every country for soccer. And then also changed the image of women in general. I mean, women were at that point seen strength and muscles were seen as beauty. You could be pretty and you could be strong at the same time. You could be the girl next door and still be fierce on the pitch. And I think it changed how women were viewed, what we were able to do. And then also, you know, I've had many, many, you know, mid-50-year-old men coming up to me in the 20 years since, you know, telling me their stories of watching that game on TV, whether they were on a fishing trip with their buddies or in a bar watching a women's soccer event, never mind women's sports, but soccer of all things. And just the emotion that they have when they tell me this, it's like they're right back there again. And that to me is really something that's truly a gift. And that's not usually something that occurs with something positive. You usually remember exactly where you were when something horrible happened. But a lot of people remember the beauty and the amazing thing we did as a good thing.
Sure did. There have been many conversations about concussions in women's soccer. And I know, Brianna, you've been particularly outspoken. Your career ended because of a concussion. Late last month, former soccer stars Brandi Chastain and Michelle Akers said that they would take part in a study at the Boston University CTE Center. CTE is a progressive neurodegenerative disease associated with repetitive head trauma. Here she is, Michelle Akers, telling CBS Evening News she suffers from migraines. And then she went on to say this.
My coach would just serve balls and balls and balls and balls into the box, and I would do header after header after header after header. I'm definitely vulnerable to this kind of problem, so it's important to figure it out. And if I am vulnerable, then lots of other people are.
Brianna, I'll start with you on this. We've heard a lot about concussion and male football players, but here we go with concussion and female soccer players.
Absolutely. And you're right. My career ended in April 2010. And in September of 2013, I decided to become an advocate for concussion. I was in what I call the wilderness, and I'm sure Michelle knows that well, for 3 years and in a very, very bad place, a very dark place, because I couldn't get the help I needed. And I finally was able to do that. And I wanted to make it mean something. And I wanted to change the discussion. I was out there, you know, for 3 years from 2013 to 2017, you know, testifying before Congress about concussion, because I wanted people to understand it wasn't just about male football players. It was about female soccer players. It was about women in domestic abuse situations. It's about car accidents and all these different kinds of sports where people have head injuries, and it completely changes your life. It's not the kind of injury you can just act like nothing is wrong. We have to get, you know, assessment of it. And I realized, too, like Michelle said, there wasn't a whole lot of information or research done on women. And now there will be. And that's a fantastic step forward.
Caitlin Murray, is this issue sort of coming to the fore for many of these female players, past and present?
Yeah, I mean, last night, Kelly O'Hara bumped heads with Leaky Martins. And it was kind of a scary moment, yeah, watching the replay, watching them, you know, just clash their heads into each other. And Kelly O'Hara went on to finish that half, but she couldn't return after the break because afterward in the mix zone, she said she wasn't really feeling that well. U.S. Soccer said that she was being evaluated because she was showing concussion symptoms. And that has been a constant issue in the game of soccer that I really think FIFA needs to address. I mean, concussion protocol is supposed to take, I think, like 10 minutes or more. And yet coaches and players and people on teams don't want to have a player leave the field for 10 minutes if there's a chance that they're not going to come back on. So usually what ends up happening is what happened last night. The player just goes back on the field, and that needs to be addressed. That's not a safe way to deal with someone who has a concussion. And we've seen that time and time again. That happens in men's World Cups, women's World Cups. I'm sure it's happening in youth soccer games. FIFA really needs to think about, you know, maybe changing the rules, doing something so there is a way for people with head injuries to be properly evaluated.
I got a lot of callers here that want to join us. Let's get Andrea in first from Ithaca, New York. Hi, Andrea. Welcome to On Point.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
You bet.
I just I want to celebrate for a moment the queer visibility of this, you know, World Cup. I feel like, you know, athletes like Megan Rapinoe and Allie Krieger and Ashlyn Harris, as well as all the queer women on all the other teams, being so out and proud has been an incredible thing for fans in this country and for athletes. As an educator and a coach, to have young women be able to see out and proud women on the pitch, I think is going to have a huge impact on their ability to celebrate their own sexuality and sexual identity.
Andrea, thank you. Brianna, Megan Rapinoe surely has put a spotlight on LGBTQ visibility, gay pride. Speak to that for a moment, would you?
Yes, Megan has done a fantastic job raising the visibility of gay folks, especially on the women's side. You know, she said something to the effect that, you know, neither a championship has been won without somebody gay on that team, and yours truly as well. So, you know, I love it. There was a moment a few years ago when Abby Wambach went over to her then at the time wife to celebrate and reach up into the crowd and hug her and give her a kiss. And the camera actually stayed on her. And right there, that was a huge moment, that the camera actually was allowing everybody to see Abby and the people in her life that matter to her most, and to see her celebrate her World Cup victory. And I think it's absolutely fantastic. I read an article the other day about, I think it was like either 41 or 44 women that were playing in this World Cup championship from all countries are out. And it's a testament to how far we've come with acceptance. We do obviously have further to go, but it's so nice that, you know, a lot of the women feel like it's important. They feel comfortable, and they feel like they can express themselves and really be who they are, playing the sport they love.
Caitlin Murray, your thoughts?
Yeah, actually, I thought of the exact same moment that Bri thought of. It was when Abby Wambach, after winning the World Cup in 2015, goes over to her wife. And that was sort of a novel thing at the time. That was only 4 years ago, but I remember how much buzz and discussion that got. And now, 4 years later, we have two players on the World Cup champions who are engaged and are going to be married. And it's not really the same sort of discussion around it. It's not that weird or unheard of. You know, I think people are mostly just happy for them. That's a really amazing experience. I spoke to Ashlyn Harris in the Mix Zone last night, who talked about how incredible it was to experience this with her fiance, and, you know, Allie Krieger being able to get on the field because, you know, Kelly O'Hara had to come off, and Allie Krieger stepping up and how proud she was to see the person that she loved most. Ashlyn Harris was able to watch, you know, the most important person in her life step up in a really big moment. So I think it's really interesting to see just how quick that progress has come. It took a while for that progress to start, but now we're at a point where it's just happening so rapidly.
Back to the phones, to Savannah, Georgia. Amar is on the line. Welcome to the program.
Hello. Thank you for having me. Mm-hmm. Hello, ladies, and congratulations with winning the World Cup. I am a Palestinian immigrant to this great nation, and yesterday I couldn't be more patriotic and proud seeing these girls winning the World Cup, and 100% supportive of their fight, and they're there to get equal pay, and I will watch them at any time, any day, more than the men's team. And I have a 9-year-old girl, and I am so proud that these girls are putting the road easier for her to be a soccer player if she wants to be and get treated equally.
Amara,
congratulations again.
Thank you so much, and the best to your 9-year-old little player there. Thanks for calling. Here's Mark in Buffalo, New York. Hi, Mark. Welcome to the program.
Hi. I'm very happy that you've taken my call, and I'm also ecstatic that the women have won the World Cup. I've got a comment, and I hope it's used to elevate what they've done beyond just winning the trophy, and that is I see where this is a moment that it actually can transcend sport and can be used to elevate the celebration for a moment. It's like a Peter Sellers being there moment, where because soccer is such a universal sport that's held by men and women, that that somehow these women would see this unique time as a hopeful moment to use their win for the good of diplomacy. And possible ambassadorship to other women who are struggling in sport, but just in terms
also
of human rights.
In life and in rights, yeah. Mark, thank you so much. It's a good point. And to that point, I'm going to play this clip from 2016 when the U.S. women's soccer team filed a complaint with the Equal Opportunity Employment Commission. Team stars went on 60 Minutes on CBS to talk about their fight for equal pay. Here's Carly Lloyd speaking to host Nora O'Donnell.
We feel like we're treated like second-class citizens because they don't care as much about us as they do the men.
Do you think you should be paid more than the men's team?
Yeah, absolutely.
Why?
we win. We're successful. Should get what we deserve.
To Mark's point and to Carly's there, you know, the march is on, Brianna. This is a moment where they can stand up and make many, many points moving forward.
Absolutely. And like I had mentioned earlier, the arguments no longer hold water. The revenue was the main one, and it just doesn't, it's not valid anymore. And also the environment, society, with the Me Too movement, with the Time's Up movement, with all these women that are now congressional leaders, I think it's time. And once again, the one element of victory, we've all always done that. You know, that's 8 championships, including World Cups and Olympic gold medals in 28 years. Mm. There really is no excuse to not be equal in this United States of America.
We are discussing the trailblazing athletes in women's soccer. With the big win yesterday, you can join the conversation. What do the players on the women's national team represent to you? Much more after the break. I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point. We'll be right back. This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson. We're talking about women in sports on the heels of the 4th victory for the U.S. women's national team. You can join the conversation. What would you like to see next for women's soccer, for women in sports? Follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. My guest today, Caitlin Murray, author of The National Team, The Inside Story of the Women Who Changed Soccer. Brianna Scurry, legendary goalie and former U.S. women's national team player. And now I'd like to bring another voice into the conversation, Angela Hughleys. She joins me from Los Angeles. She's a 2-time Olympic gold medalist for U.S. soccer, a 2-time World Cup bronze medalist for the U.S. women's national team. She was an analyst for the FIFA Women's World Cup with Fox Sports and is former president of the Women's Sports Foundation, which was founded in 1974 by tennis legend Billie Jean King. And is dedicated to ensuring all girls access to sports. Angela, welcome to the program. Nice to have you.
Thanks, Jane. Thanks for having me.
So what did this win mean to you yesterday, the Women's World Cup?
I almost feel a little bit like Megan Rapinoe in terms of the surrealness and putting it in words. I got emotional just even watching it because it transcends soccer, it transcends sports. And I think where we saw the 99 team making that global shift in the women's game, I think this 2019 team is really making a shift in our entire world culture. Mm-hmm. And the reason why is because these women stand for and promote and unapologetically stand in their power for these beliefs that they hold and really taking on that responsibility to change the conversation, to make shifts, not for themselves, but for other people. Mm. So for me, watching them win, that crack in the glass ceiling, it's starting to get shattered because of this team, because of that win. And not just because of the win of the World Cup final, but because of how they handled themselves and conducted themselves throughout the entire tournament.
I'm curious, historically, how do you see the impact or the effect of Title IX on amplifying the number of players and the level of play, not just in the U.S., but around the world?
I think there's probably a direct correlation with Title IX and what we're seeing today. Being able to spend time with Billie Jean King and knowing about her history, what she's done, I think there's a reason why she's still relevant today and why the athletes, especially female athletes, continue to thank her for what she's done and really making Title IX at the forefront. And, you know, I heard Bri speaking earlier about there's still a long way to go still on all sorts of things when you talk about LGBTQ issues, when you talk about gender and race, but Title IX has definitely allowed and really amplified the voice that that we're seeing and hearing from these women today.
In Caitlin Murray's book, she writes about Julie Foudy, who was a Stanford graduate who once said that when she was growing up, she had no choice but to look up to male basketball players. She said, my sports role models were 7 feet tall and 300 pounds. What is the Women's Sports Foundation doing to try to shift the focus for these young girls playing soccer today and other sports generally?
I think pretty much everyone at the Women's Sports Foundation would probably say they hope there comes a day sooner rather than later where there's not a need for them to exist. And that really means that there's equal opportunity for young girls to play in a safe space, to have the opportunity to enjoy sports. And what the Women's Sports Foundation really does is help to not only provide the research and the statistical information of how sports can help females stay safe, how they can become more confident through sports, the life lessons and skills that sports really provide to a young person. Mm-hmm. And that's really the mission of what the Women's Sports Foundation is all about. It's to ensure the equal opportunity and the opportunity for young girls to participate in sports.
Let me get caller Stephen in here from Boston, Massachusetts. Hi, Stephen. Welcome to On Point.
Hi. Thank you very much. How are you all?
Well, thank you very much. Go ahead.
Good. Well, you know, equality in sports is fantastic, and I'm all for it. But when the revenue isn't there, how do you get equality in money? You can't bankrupt an organization that supports you if you bring in a million and the players want 2 million. How do you do that?
Stephen, thank you. Caitlin Murray, is the revenue there, to Stephen's point? Can this actually, practically speaking, happen?
Yeah, well, first of all, the women's national team has been bringing in more revenue than the men's national team for their games. That's just a fact. U.S. Soccer's own financials say that. So in the past, maybe that was a better argument. It's not a better argument now. The other way people want to talk about revenue is when it comes to FIFA prize money or bonuses from U.S. Soccer. And they always say that the men bring in billions of dollars for the World Cup and the women don't. And the fact of the matter is FIFA doesn't break out the revenues for the men's and the women's World Cup. So the biggest drivers of money, TV rights and sponsorships, we don't actually know how much the men bring in versus the women. So people want to throw out these numbers and say the men bring in 50 times more revenue or whatever it is. And that's just factually not true. There's no way to calculate that. And in fact, you know, the former head of women's football for FIFA has come out and said that FIFA has never even tried to figure out how much the Women's World Cup is worth, how much revenue the Women's World Cup is bringing in. They refuse to break out those revenues and figure it out. And I think when people talk about revenue, it's based on assumptions. It's based on, you know, no offense, lazy arguments. If you do the research, it just doesn't back up the idea that the men bring in more revenue. So I think the women actually, the U.S. women's national team has a pretty good argument here with the case that they've made. Mm-hmm. And I think there's going to be more pressure on FIFA because I think it's getting harder for them to defend their position of giving the women so little prize money compared to the men. When you look at the TV ratings, when you look at the attention that the Women's World Cup is getting.
Angela Huclis, how do you see this? How do you see the National Women's Soccer League in terms of media coverage, in terms of who the owners are, in terms of financial support, all of it? To Steve's point.
It's still a work in progress. I mean, I think we've seen several iterations of the Women's Soccer League here domestically take form and shape. We're just now seeing a new TV station picking up the league halfway through. ESPN is now going to cover the NWSL for this last half of its season. And I think, you know, when you look at the ownership, I think it's very comparable to how we've seen women's soccer develop over the years historically. And I think we look at how things have changed and grown since the time that I started playing, where I only had the option to play really with all boys teams. And then making rules and laws that girls can only play on girls teams because I was too dominant in a boys league. And it's similar to what we're seeing on the ownership. It's still very youthful in its history, and I think we will see more change grow as we're seeing technically and tactically in the women's game. We'll see the same things kind of happen too, I believe, when we look at ownership and the savviness of owners taking really control and charge to make this game better and more sustainable in our country.
I want to talk about sponsorship deals for a couple of minutes here. Shortly after the U.S. women's national team defeated the Netherlands to win their fourth World Cup yesterday, Nike released its newest ad called Never Stop Winning. Here is part of it.
Four-time champions and keep winning until we not only become the best female soccer team, but the best soccer team in the world. And that a whole generation of girls and boys will go out and play and say things like, I want to be like Megan Rapinoe when I grow up. And that they'll be inspired to talk and win and stand up for themselves.
Nike has received a lot of acclaim for its commercials promoting female athletes, but the company is not without criticism. Back in May, female track and field athletes broke their non-disclosure agreements and told the New York Times that Nike did not guarantee them a salary during pregnancy and early maternity. In response to the article, the company said it would end financial penalties for pregnant athletes. Brianna Scurry, talk about that. Talk about sponsorship deals. I mean, it seems like athletes like Alex Morgan picked up where Mia Hamm left off in the 1990s with Nike and Coke and McDonald's, among others.
Absolutely. So if you look at the women's national team from the point of view of a sponsor, and a sponsor understands, like Nike, like a Coca-Cola, how do I get access to that team? The best way to do that is to pour the sponsorship dollars into the U.S. Soccer Federation as a whole, and then I can get access to the winners. In my opinion, Nike, the Nikes of the world, the Cokes, those companies want access to the winners, to the role models that are appealing not only to them as a corporation for what they stand for, but the demographic of people that they're selling their products to. And I think also with the lawsuit, with the fight that we've been doing for decades, it's providing some level of transparency. And that's part of the reason why you do it as well, because as was said earlier, it's not clear where the money is going to and why it came in the first place. Mm. And so that speaks to the whole revenue / sponsorship / who gets the dollars and why at any given time over the course of years, why it's important to have these battles somewhat on a legal standpoint so that you can have transparency and find out where the money is going. And as far as I'm concerned, all these companies that are attached themselves to U.S. soccer are trying to grow the game, help sponsor the game, help grow the game in this country for everyone, not just for boys, but also for girls, for women. And that's an important thing for them when they consider, do I want to be a part of something that's good? And U.S. soccer is good. Why? Because the women are winners.
Let me get Jose in here from Tamarack, Florida. Hi, Jose. Welcome to the program.
Hi. I just wanted to say that I thought the games were awesome. I thought the girls played beautifully. I mean, I bet you they could beat the men's soccer team. It was amazing. I never watched sports, and I watched these games because they played beautifully. Now, my other comment is I'm a business owner. So, honestly, the women are winning. There are people more watching them more. Definitely they should get paid more than the men. But one thing I don't agree is the thought that everybody should get paid equal. You get paid by what you produce. It's like a person that comes to work with me. If another person comes and can produce more, I'm going to pay them more.
Okay.
So women should definitely get paid about that.
All right, Jose. Let me read this comment from our website in the context of a male fan. This gentleman says, I'm primarily a fan of the major American sports leagues, MBL, Major League Baseball, NFL, NBA, NHL. But I like good sportsmanship, and I watch the U.S. women's game leading their championship. The level of play is high. The games are more watchable than men's soccer for many reasons, especially the lack of hype. And these women are obviously very skilled, fit, and athletic. I'm curious, Brianna, how are the men doing?
I love the men. Don't get me wrong. They are struggling right now. You know, they recently didn't qualify for their World Cup a few years ago, and they did actually have that Gold Cup final last night, and unfortunately they lost to Mexico 1-0 at in Chicago Soldier Field. So they are rebuilding, and it's a different standard in terms of success for the men as for the women. The standard for the women's team is win forever. That's the standard. Whereas the standard for the men's team, at least right now, is let's make a good show and try to qualify for a World Cup next time. Mm-hmm. That one that's not in our country where we, as a host, would automatically qualify. So I think just that in and of itself is another issue, whereas the standard for success is so incredibly high, yet the dollars that are, you know, put into the program and paid to the women who are essentially carrying soccer in this country to higher and higher levels is not there.
Caitlin Murray, wrap us up here. What do you want to see next with women's soccer?
Yeah, I think the women's national team is hugely popular. People love them. They just won a World Cup. I think their popularity is going to reach even higher heights than we've seen before. I think now the next step in the United States is the club game, having people support their local club teams. All the players on the women's national team play in a league called the NWSL. They are going to be there day in and day out. They're going to be at games that people can actually go and watch in person. And building a sustainable league is really the next step. I think what we're seeing is in Europe, a lot of sponsorship dollars are pouring into these European women's leagues. The attendance is getting really huge in those leagues. And the U.S. risks falling behind. And we did see the U.S. was the only non-European team in the final eight of this tournament. Europe is really nipping at the heels of the United States. So I think for the U.S. to maintain its dominance, for women's soccer to maintain its importance, it really has to now be about the women's club game and, you know, having fans who watched last night, or I guess it was the morning for you in the United States. I'm here in France. For people who watched and were excited, they need to now channel that excitement to what's going to be going on in their own backyard in the NWSL.
Last 10 seconds to you, Angela. Where do the women take this historic moment?
I think I love what Caitlin said about the sustainability of a league, but I like to have lofty goals and dreams, and I believe that this team has the ability to change the conversation and shift a lot of individual beliefs in different types of culture, in our business culture and in our lifestyle. So I think they have the ability to do that, and that's what I'd like to see.
Well, Team USA, you made us proud. Some incredible moments yesterday. Angela Hughes, Brianna Scurry, Caitlin Murray, many thanks to all of you for your perspective, for walking us through all the many different aspects of women's soccer. We appreciate it. And listeners, thanks so much to you. You can continue the conversation, get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook. I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point.